Recently, there was this horrible attack on a synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Tree of Life Synagogue. 11 people were killed, others were injured. It was, what can you say? It happens to be that this podcast is an opportunity to talk about what happened in Squirrel Hill, which is, by the way, where I grew up as a little kid. It's also a chance to talk out loud about how we change things to make things better. Here are my guests. Let's start this by going around the table and having everybody introduce themselves. Reverend?
I'm Reverend Steve Jerby. I'm the lead pastor of Bethel Lutheran Church in Encino and the chair of the board of the Interfaith Solidarity Network.
Max?
My name is Max Greenberg. I'm a doctoral candidate in Chicano Studies at UCLA, and I'm a member of If Not Now organization in Los Angeles.
And you know what? If even though you don't have your doctor yet, I still might call you Dr. Max.
I have no problem with that.
All right, very good. Shay?
Hi, I'm Shay Roman, a writer and TV producer, and I'm also a leader in LA of If Not Now.
All right. Aaron?
I'm Aaron Wolf. I'm an actor, director. I'm the founder of Howling Wolf Productions, and I recently completed a film that's going to be out nationwide November 13th for One Night Only event about this very topic we're talking about.
Great. Marcia?
I'm Marcia Novak. I'm a proud member of Temple Judea in Tarzana, and I'm the co-founder of the Interfaith Solidarity Network.
All right. Mike?
My name is Cantor Mike Stein. I'm the cantor at Temple Aliyah in Woodland Hills, and I am on the board of the Interfaith Solidarity Network, proud member.
All right, Cantor, let's start with you. And let's talk about two events you guys recently had with regard to what happened in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You were involved in walks. You were involved in candlelight vigils. You were in solidarity with those in Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh. And you were sharing the feelings. And Cantor, why don't you start with that? What was your event and what happened?
Well, our event was with the Interfaith Solidarity Network. We had a march, our second annual Solidarity March. And this has grown out of years and years. And there used to be the Valley Interfaith Council, and I was very involved in that with music and children singing together in choirs. But this march is a second annual march. And it's the work that we do, the Interfaith Solidarity Network. It's about getting people to know each other, getting them to sit across the table, getting them to understand each other, because with those tools, we're able to help eliminate hate.
You know, what's interesting about that march that you talked about was that it was planned. It
yes.
just coincidentally happened
yes.
to be at the
yes.
same time as the attack on the synagogue Tree of Life in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And that was kind of odd, wasn't it, Marcia?
Yes, it was sad, but it was fortuitous that we were coming together, that we were coming together in solidarity anyway. So we sadly mourned together, but we walked together, we marched together.
Did you hold hands? Did you hold hands? Did you hold arms? Did you?
Yes, we did.
All of the above.
We did.
What was your reaction when you heard about the shooting?
Oh, I was horrified. I was devastated. I was scared.
Why? Why were you scared?
Because if it can happen there, it can happen here. It can happen anywhere. But I have to say I was mostly very angry. Very angry that this is happening in our country.
How did you feel, Cantor? Did you have the same anger? Did you have the same
I angst? Did not have anger. I had extreme sadness. I was sitting in the synagogue, and when the rabbi announced it to everyone, there was just a loss of hope.
I want to ask you something because you made a point there that I didn't even think about. You were in services.
Yes.
At the same time, they were in services.
Yes.
You got the word
yes.
after the attack happened
yes.
almost instantaneously.
Yes.
What did the rabbi say?
The rabbi said, this is what happened. And I know the first thing that he did was talk about the tragedy, of course, but this is the day we live in. He told everybody where the safe rooms were. And we had – and the LAPD –
the safe rooms at your
at our sanctuary.
Temple Aliyah.
Yes, rooms that could lock. And we had a policeman from the LAPD come and who was actually Jewish and partook in the service. But he was there, and that comforted us somewhat. It really did. But there was shock. There was anger. There are many people who survived the Holocaust in our synagogue who – just thought never again was the real thing.
You know, it's interesting because active shooter drills, we've had them here at Fox 11. Just to be aware what to do, you probably never thought you'd have to use it in such a circumstance.
No, absolutely
not. I mean,
not.
You didn't actually use it, but be told about it in such a circumstance.
Right, and to inform everybody sitting there, this was a necessity. This wasn't like, maybe I should. This is a necessity. We have to know what to do in case there's a copycat.
You know, Aaron, let me just pick up on that. I want to talk about your reaction when you first heard about the attack.
Yeah, my reaction when I heard of the attack, I was in bed. I turned on the TV. I saw it.
You were sleeping late on a Saturday?
Yeah, I know.
Who would have thunk?
Who would have thunk? I had a birthday party the night before for a friend, so I was up a little late. And I woke up, and I turned on the TV. I saw it for about 10 seconds, and I turned it off right away. And I went back to sleep to try to make it go away. And then about 10, 15 minutes later, I woke up, and I thought, wait one second here. What would my grandfather do? My grandfather...
Who was a rabbi at the Wilshire Temple.
Rabbi at the Wilshire Temple. And
Rabbi Wolf.
And he escaped Nazi Germany to come here to practice freely. And he started the interfaith organization that we just heard about. And I thought, I got to get to work. I got to do what he would do, which is get to work. And so I made some calls. I started, having my voice heard on TV to say, we've got to make a difference. And our movie, which is coming out November 13th for one night, and then there's an event afterwards. And in the event, we can change what we're doing. So I got different voices on it, which are now going to be in the theater, that are talking about Pittsburgh and the event and the movie, which is about hope and about feeling good and about community, is now also about healing and talking to different religious leaders.
Isn't
about
that
healing.
Interesting, though? I mean, one day your movie is about the rebuilding of a temple, and the next day your movie is about trying to figure out how to have hope.
It's a really weird juxtaposition, and that's what. And in the movie is also my personal journey. I wear my heart and my sleeve in it.
So tell me about that, because you kind of moved away from Judaism, didn't you?
I did. I was in New York in college and was all caught up in everything but my faith. And then I came back. I was supposed to get married. I didn't get married. The wedding was called off a month before. And that's what started me doing this film.
You notice all the Jewish women in here went, wait, I have a girlfriend. I know somebody's daughter.
Yeah. And now I'm blushing.
Yeah.
I was supposed to get married, didn't get married a month before it was called off. I thought it was the worst thing to ever happen to me. This puts things in perspective. And that was I look back and I think dumb, stupid Aaron then being so sad about something that was such a gift, because it started. I went to Rabbi Leder, who's in the film, and said, what do you think I should do? And he said, why don't you chronicle, you're Aaron, you're an actor, you're a director, chronicle a few things that we're doing. And that led to a three-year project of making this film, Restoring Tomorrow, which isn't just about Wilshire Boulevard Temple. It's about churches, it's about temples, it's about everywhere in the country and in the world, really. And we show all the different places and say, look, that we have so much in common. We have so much in common, and we need to come together. We need to remember these commonalities, and I'm more connected to my Judaism than ever. And then the moment when I heard about that Pittsburgh thing, I wanted to go back to sleep, and then I couldn't because I thought, wait, this just changed. I have, like, the first movie ever to have a national one-day release in theaters nationwide about a synagogue, and then 2 weeks before, 11 people are killed at a synagogue. If I don't have my voice heard, I'm not my grandfather. I want him to look down and say, Aaron, you're carrying on my voice.
Doing the right thing. You know, it's funny, of all the people in this room, there are quite a few. I'm the only one that ever lived in Pittsburgh. And that's true, right? Nobody ever lived in Pittsburgh. And so, you know, I have that personal connection with Squirrel Hill because I grew up in Squirrel Hill. I have a family still there. And a cousin of mine lives just about a block or two from Tree of Life and knew four of the people that got killed in that synagogue shooting. So, you know, it's interesting that, you know, even on the other side of the country, whether it's because of a sense of family being Jewish and feeling connection to people who are Jewish in another part of the country, or whether it really is blood relations, somehow we all tend to be caught up in these sort of things. Shay, how did it strike you when you first heard the news?
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I was also sleeping in on a Saturday.
Why?
So, shame on you.
So I, you know, also was in bed and woke up to the news. And I mean, you know, a kind of terror that I probably haven't ever felt before. I think, you know, being the descendant of Holocaust survivors, you know, this is kind of the thing that is always in the back of your mind. And, you know, that is that paranoia or is that fear real? And obviously, you know, that fear is real. That fear is real, especially right now. Yeah, I mean, I think being a young person in this moment that is so incredibly political, it is scary. And you have to really hold on to, you know, I guess hope that, you know, some of our leaders will really take a stand against this kind of hate.
It's interesting because we have several generations in this room. Millennials, you and Max. I guess, are you a millennial, Aaron?
Yeah.
You are? Yeah. I've been a millennial several times.
You have.
I graduated high school earlier than you did.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Nah, we'll compare notes later. There's a microphone in front of us right now. but you know, Max, I guess, you know, it's the same sort of question. I mean, you hear this, and I don't know. I mean, we hear about mass shootings. You know, we heard about, you know, the church shooting in South Carolina, Columbine, all these sort of things that happen. We hear about them and we shake our heads and we say, oh, it's terrible. I mean, we got to say. Then you hear about a synagogue and you're Jewish and it strikes you differently, doesn't it?
Sure. You know, and I think this for me was the second major blow of the week. You know, I identify as Jewish. I also identify as transgender. So this was, you know, in the last 10 days, I have felt, you know, different parts of my identity very much under attack. And I think it's very connected to, you know, our leaders in government, our other institutional religious leaders. And, you know, even just yesterday, I have friends and family members who at least psychologically are being affected by this threat to end birthright citizenship. So I look at it as this is a moment of tremendous shared struggle. And, you know, Aaron's mentioning, you know, we need to come together and in the ways that we're the same. I really think we need to be rallying around the ways in which we are different, but where we are connected is that we're all being attacked because we're different. So I'm very hopeful. Like I said earlier in our segment, I feel like this is a moment where we can see the ways in which our differences are being attacked very clearly. And so my hope for the Jewish community is to see, you know, we're just one in the list of many people under attack right now, and our allies have never been clearer. So I think this is a tremendous moment of possibility for solidarity in the ways in which we see our liberation is very much codependent.
And not to dampen the mood of the thought, but, you know, you hear about the Holocaust. You hear about it from family. You hear about it from history books in school. You hear about it by watching the History Channel and seeing all those black and white videos. But when you actually heard this, did anything about the anti-Semitism of it, the anti-Judaism nature of it, what struck you about that?
You know, it wasn't surprising. Anti-Semitism has been baked into the Americas since Europeans came over. I mean, first with the Inquisition, and then it's kind of been built into our immigration policy very explicitly since the 1920s. None of this happened in a vacuum. I think since post-World War II, it's kind of been hiding in plain sight. Coded language, term, you know, using the term globalist, I wasn't surprised at all, and I think it has just reached a level of visibility that's kind of unavoidable at this
point. Now, I would just say this in sort of countering that. I would say that those of us in this room that have been millennials more than once could have made that same comment some time back, that these things sort of go around and come around. And it's not necessarily this is the worst synagogue attack in American history, but it's not that we haven't had these moments in the past before, right?
We had it right here
The microphone, Marcia.
We had it right here in the San Fernando Valley at the Jewish Community Center.
That's right.
But I also
that's right.
Think
tell everybody what happened just before you jump in there, Shay.
Let's see, it was 1990.
It was in the 90s.
In the 90s.
It was
and,
right when I came here.
Yeah, and a gunman walked into the North Valley Jewish Community Center and started shooting. And he didn't kill anybody in the community center. He badly injured some people, but then somehow he got out and he killed a postal worker.
That's right, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. And so here's another example. And, that, you know, 1990-something, you were little guys? Yeah. So, you know, that wasn't on your radar, really. Mm-hmm. But so I guess the point I'm trying to make is, yes, this is big, this is visible, this is the worst in your lifetime. Mm-hmm. But, you know, unfortunately and very tragically, these things tend to cycle somehow, and it's hard to understand. Reverend, pick it up from there. And sort of give us your feeling also of when you first heard about it.
Yeah, so I was actually traveling from the Midwest, and it was actually in a layover when I first got the news. And
where were you laid over? It's very important to the conversation.
Portland.
Sure. Okay.
Because when you're coming from Chicago to LA, Portland is a natural
place to lay over. Right, exactly.
Right. And
it's a nice city.
And the first march, which happened just a few weeks after I arrived in LA, was a direct response to Islamophobia that was happening throughout our country and threats around our Muslim neighbors, and a mobilization of faith communities to say that we're going to resist that hatred. And so we were building an organization, a movement, and a network where we always knew that a response to hatred was part of what we're doing, that we are going to break down these barriers and that we're going to find ways to inspire solidarity. And so we were positioned correctly to be able to respond to a tragedy. And for me personally, before coming to LA, I served in a community that experienced tremendous amount of gun violence. I had several members of my congregation who had died by gun violence, and
this was in
Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee,
yeah, and I was brought back to this visceral moment where I was leading Sunday services, and at the end of Sunday services, one of our ushers came forward and gave us the news of the shooting at the Sikh temple in Oak Creek,
right,
and that attack on a religious institution, and the congregation that I served, because we had experienced so much trauma, felt this incredible kinship in the struggle and this moment of saying, we are in this together. And I think that same spirit of solidarity is what we saw at the march in Woodland Hills, where the Islamic community embraced this moment.
And this is the march to be in solidarity with the victims and the families in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Right. Yeah. And so there was a community that was open to respond to that. And I think the mobilization that happened at the vigil is that same spirit that says this could be a moment of retreat and fear and isolation. But I actually think those are the forces of evil are encouraging us to do that. And so the true resistance is to move beyond that and to come together and to stand together. And
so just to be clear, this is not new either.
Right.
This is not new either. We can invoke Rodney King here. Mm-hmm. Can't we all get along? We can invoke any leader who over time has said we need to come together.
And my own personal tradition is out of the Lutheran Church. And one of the leaders of the Reformation, Martin Luther, was a horrible anti-Semite. And so that's a legacy that my denomination and my faith tradition needs to reckon with. And so I feel deeply invested in standing with Jewish siblings in these moments.
Just the concept, because I think we have to remember, we're in the United States of America. It's called the United States, United. And so that means that we are all here to practice free religion. We have free speech. And in 1790, George Washington wrote this letter specifically about Jews, saying that he welcomes Jews into the country.
And that they would be protected.
And that they would be protected. And that was a statement by our founding fathers. And when you start talking about the United States, I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, whatever.
Libertarian, Green Party,
anything,
or Labor Party.
These are the founding fathers of our country saying this. And for some reason, and I'm not exactly sure why, but we all have different answers why, this concept of what our country is getting lost. And it's all about you versus, or us versus them. And I don't understand it, but I know we need to keep reminding everyone of who we actually are. And that in 1790, George Washington said that for a reason. And our country made a lot of progress since then. But the fact that we're stepping back to before 1790, all of a sudden, it's like, what is going on? We have to keep having this conversation and reminding people who we are. We're not against each other.
But
we're
isn't
with
that,
each
isn't
other.
That the point I made earlier, that we have to keep going back and saying, who are we? Every time there's a mass shooting, every right. time there's an incident right. that involves whatever.
So I think there's a loss of hope because we thought we were moving forward. We thought that after the Civil Rights Act, that the African American, the black people in this country would have the same freedoms. But people aren't understanding the narratives of all of those that are seem to not have a voice anymore. And there's a voice that's very loud, and it's overshadowing us people who feel very strongly that we're created in God's image. That it was our duty as human beings to be kind, to be compassionate, to be fair, to be loyal, to be just. And there seems to be a voice. You talk about George Washington and the Jews, but we had slaves then. I mean, we have to realize that we have not always been this pure, when the purity was breathed into our soul of a nation, we had some work to do. And we thought we were so much farther. And now I think that's what hurts so badly. And that's why we have to re-educate. I think that's the work that our group, that all groups are thinking
about. So how do you do that? How do you do that? How do you re-educate? What do you do?
Rewrite history books. You know, we're talking about, you know, maybe George Washington's out there preaching for religious freedom, but founding fathers are slave owners, and this country was built on stolen land. So if we're thinking about who are we as a nation, we can't omit what this country was founded on. The exploitation of bodies of color and the annihilation of indigenous people. So we need to start there and stop lying to ourselves about who we were, and that we need to get back to that. I think it starts with telling the truth with how this nation was founded. Yes, there's religious freedom, but it's built on capitalist exploitation and genocide. Mm-hmm. So I think starting there and being honest.
And that's part about what I said about the narrative. The narrative is different for everybody. It's a different story, and we need to know what that story is, because the truth as we know it is sometimes a little shady.
But what you're saying, which is dead on, and you're definitely, I think I give you a doctorate right now for your...
I already did.
You already gave him a doctorate. Max the way you speak is really beautiful. And what I mean when I say about that 1790 moment it's not that we weren't completely flawed. We're going to be constantly flawed and constantly working toward becoming a better country. But going backwards is the problem for me. And in 1790, there were problems. And it's always been about how can we move forwards. And right now, in my lifetime, in our lifetimes, this is the craziest thing against Jews that's ever happened. And so that's why it is a wake-up call for me, because yes, there's always a problem that we can find about how our country is doing things wrong. This one happened to be something that was a problem that we solved a long, long time ago and continues to be a problem anyway, and we need to continue to solve it. And I didn't realize it was so alive until Charlottesville. And the I showed my movie in Charlottesville, and then that happened there. It's like it doesn't make sense.
And the gift of faith communities is that we actually know how to handle stories and truth. That we are a space where we can tell the stories that reveal our deepest value, our deepest sense of what is important. In the Christian tradition, Jesus says, "You will know the truth, and it will set you free." And in the Hebrew scriptures, we know that wisdom was there at the beginning of creation, that wisdom was a co-creator with the divine. Proverbs tells us that. And so when faith communities respond to these moments, we have a unique voice and a unique moment. And what we have to do is embrace the greatest truth, which is reckoning with our own complicity in evil structures and systems, but also moving towards a place of liberation and freedom.
It sounds like the best sermon ever.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Never give a preacher a mic.
Yeah, there you go.
That was
Shay.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I'm thinking, you know, immediately about this fear of the truth. I think that, you know, in our country and definitely in the American Jewish community, there's a lot of fear. And I think there's a lot of fear sometimes to speak out about the truth to each other. So I really hope that in this moment we can also be honest with each other. Certainly, you know, anti-Semitism is an age-old problem. There's no question. But I also don't feel that it's a coincidence that the worst anti-Semitic attack in the history of our country is happening right now in this moment. And right. I think there is a lot of fear around, you know, what, like, the idea of white supremacy or white nationalism or just extremism. And I think we have to be able to be strong and together and to call it out, because otherwise I don't know how we will face it.
I'm gonna dovetail off of that, because I want to go around the table and I want to ask each of you to talk to the people out there and tell them what you would like them to do to try to make this a better world. And I'll start with the canter.
Love each other.
There you go.
No, seriously, that is a tough question. I think the basic point and something I've been working on is that if we can teach each other to love each other, if we sing with each other, if we talk with each other, if we eat with each other, if we sit down and break bread with each other, even within our own religious circles, we need to be able to do that, and that's the most important thing. I have choirs, and you know that there's music, there's theater, there's all these things in the arts, and there's all these things in religion that say we can get together and love each other right now.
Marcia, why don't you talk to the people directly? Tell them what you want them to do.
I would say reach out to somebody you don't know. Get to know other communities. Participate in the San Fernando Valley and our Interfaith Solidarity Network. And as an early childhood educator, I would say take that very young child and teach them love.
Now I would add one more thing to this for Aaron. There are people all over the world that can hear this podcast. It is out there on the World Wide Web. So what would you say to people elsewhere from Southern California?
So this is something that I thought about the moment the incident happened in Pittsburgh, and we are doing something about it. It's a simple thing and a simple ask, but I think it can make a difference. The collage of community that we're creating is getting rid of state lines and pictures from everywhere where people are coming together to see the film or just coming together to be together. And we're going to fill in the map. And if you go to the Restoring Tomorrow Facebook, you can see this map, and it becomes purple. It's not red. It's not blue. It's purple. And it's the United States, one big picture.
And what about people who don't see the film? They can do it, too,
They can do it, too. Okay. Just send the pictures to me on my social media or the films, and we're going to keep adding to this map. We're going to keep adding to this map pictures from all around the country of people coming together, because when you're coming together to restore tomorrow, that means you're coming together to make a difference or at least make a positive impact in our community. And then this collage of community for restoring tomorrow can be something that we can all be proud of together as one. And then we're making it a movement. It went from a movie to a movement to a cause for a call to action.
Okay. Shay?
Yeah, I mean, I think now is the time to live your Jewish values, whatever that means to you. For me, it definitely means, being a moral person who fights for freedom and fights for dignity and justice for all people. There's this, famous poem who I think is actually a Lutheran pastor, Martin Niemöller. And it, it starts with, "First they came for the Jews, and I did not speak up because I was not a Jew." And, it goes on. And at the end it says, "And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me." And so I think it's so important in this moment we remember that, part of the reason that the shooting happened is because of a congregation that supported migrants and immigrants, supported Hayes. And so, this is the time to really be supporting each other and doing that hard work even when we're busy and even when we're tired.
That's a really good poem. I know that poem. Do you, Reverend, remember when that came out? Who wrote that? What can you tell us about it? Do you know anything about it? Okay, that's a tough one. You do have the information on that?
He was a Lutheran pastor, and he was famous for his resistance against the Nazi regime.
Right. Yeah, there was a small movement in Germany among what was called then the Confessing Church. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer was another one of the leaders of that movement. Bonhoeffer's inspiration was born in part from the time he spent in African-American congregations in Harlem. And so his understanding of a black Jesus really drove him to say, "I need to be back in the struggle of my homeland." And so there are these few moments where faith leaders rise above the rhetoric and actually put their lives on the line.
I think Dr. Max made a point earlier about history and understanding history. You know what? I would encourage people to go get a history book. You could do a book. It doesn't have to be Kindle, and it doesn't have to be on your phone. It could be a real book with pages and hardcovers. Know your history. Know your history. It's very important. Go ahead.
Yeah. History, you got to pick the right history book, but I'm all for history. And I just want to, raise up what Shay was mentioning, that the community at Tree of Life Synagogue was targeted because of this radical act of empathy they had towards refugees, right? Affiliated with Hayes.
Just to be clear, though, Robert Bowers, the suspect in this case, that's who you're talking about. It wasn't they, it was him.
They were targeted
by him,
the shooter, correct.
For that reason.
For their support of refugees, for hosting a national refugee Shabbat. And I think while that had very tragic, violent ending, I think it also illuminates how powerful empathy outside of your own group can be. Can be incredibly threatening to some people, but it's incredibly powerful. And so I think keep continuing to lean in to being empathetic to groups who we have a shared struggle with. And in this case, the shared experience of being in diaspora as Jews and, outside of the Jewish community as well.
I think I would add to that I think that it's important to have that voice. And I think what I'm hearing here is a room full of voices. And I think that's valuable. I think it's valuable when you have thoughts and you are willing to share them, when you don't crawl into a corner, when you speak up because you think it's the right thing to do, when you make movies because you think it's important, when you talk about things with groups that you belong to, and when you lead a temple. So, I think that, you know, in whatever way you want to view this, everybody's got a voice. The question really is, how are you going to use it? Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Hal.
Or we should say, what the hell?
What the hell? All
right. Thanks for listening to this conversation. I think a lot of what was said was very important. Also, if you haven't subscribed, please do. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitch, or any of the places where you get podcasts. And if you have a chance, give us 5 stars. Give us 6 if you don't mind. And then we'll see you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.